1992, they set up the NHS Support Federation. That was after Kenneth Clark's so-called reforms, working for patients, you may remember that, to monitor what was happening and give people information. And Health Emergency, which is run by John Lister, who got his PhD in global health reform, and has been working tirelessly for 27 years on trying to improve the health service. And we set up a website, which is run free of charge by John's brother, Paul. And our aims were, as I've written here, to build a broad, non-party political coalition which will campaign to protect the NHS from further privatisation and fragmentation. Because 2005 was when the Department of Health set up their commercial directorate. What do we need a commercial directorate for in the Department of Health? But nobody really understood what was happening at that point. And we have been attempting to inform the media, the public and MPs about the government's so-called reforms, with modest success. I think there are some people who understand what's going on. And to keep the NHS public, which means publicly provided as well as publicly funded. And you know, they keep on saying, these politicians, oh, it'll be free at the point of use, and it doesn't matter who provides the service. It does matter. And if you explain to people that having a nice new so-called independent sector treatment centre doing all the easy operations down the road from your district general hospital will mean that your district general hospital will go bankrupt, then they do understand that it matters who provides the service. Now, this Health and Social Care Act, which came in on the 27th of March, was the most undemocratic process that we've seen, I think, in recent years. It wasn't in either party's manifesto. It wasn't in the coalition agreement. It was produced 6 weeks after the coalition agreement, and obviously Nancy had had it written ready to go for the consultation. The consultation was flawed because the first thing in the consultation guidelines, the government guidelines, says that what the consultation is asking about, you must be able to influence. But this consultation set out and said, this is about the how, not the what. I think I would have said whether, but the how. So we didn't have any proper consultation. Also, they had something like 6,000 responses. We've never had an analysis of these, but talking to people who put them in, I've yet to find anybody, apart, of course, from these private health people, who thought it was a good idea. And somebody from a big voluntary organisation said, we said that we agreed with the aims. Who could disagree? To put patients at the heart of care, put clinicians in charge, and reduce bureaucracy. But of course we're all going to agree with that. But that isn't what they've done, and it wasn't what they were intending to do. So they ignored the views. So she said, we had that one sentence at the beginning, and then we had 25 pages. They didn't take any notice of any of it. It was driven through Parliament, ruthlessly. And of course the MPs have got lots of things to do. They aren't going to read a 330-page bill with 220 clauses. How could they look at the 250 substantive amendments before the third reading? Not one Labour amendment was accepted by the Bill Committee, or two Bill Committees, because we had this pause, because the clamour outside became so great. And the Lib Dems were pushing for some changes after their conference that year. But that was a great PR exercise, you know, and they kept on standing up and saying, there will be no privatisation, we've got these things, patients will be at the heart of care. And our media did not ask the right questions. They did not push these journalists. And it's a tragedy. So the majority of the amendments weren't discussed. I think most of the MPs only read them before they voted at third reading. And the parliamentary arithmetic was against us. And the basic purpose of this bill, which wasn't highlighted in one television or radio programme that I saw, is to turn the NHS into a market. And the peers, who were presented with all these amendments that haven't been looked at, did make some minor changes. The important thing about the Secretary of State having a duty to provide and secure a comprehensive health service which Labour in the 2006 Act had put in a weasel word to promote, and then a clause underneath saying provide and secure the provision of. That was not put into the new Act, but the Secretary of State retained a ministerial responsibility. And Shirley Williams thought that was a great victory that they got that in. That was not voted on, it was agreed by the Lords, because obviously Labour knew that they wouldn't win it. Because out of 8 divisions, there was only one that was lost by the government, that was about VAT for charities. And the other 7, the Tories came out of their moated places and voted it in, having, I'm sure, not read the bill. So what the Act does is it abolishes the 152 primary care trusts of 10 strategic health authorities and replaces them with, as Lucy has shown you, the National Commissioning Board, which initially was just going to be it, but now it's going to have 40 outposts. You know, like strategic health authorities? 250 clinical commissioning groups, so you see that's already gone up. And these are to be run by local GPs who have no training in commissioning, without public health doctors who've been hived off into the local authorities. And so what the Department of Health is busy doing is setting up commissioning support organisations, which they're putting pressure on these groups to get them to do their back office functions, but actually also the commissioning. So the GPs are just going to be rubber stamping decisions made by these people. And that's all going to come in a year or so if we don't stop it. It changed the private practice income cap so that hospitals mostly had a sort of 3 or 4% they could earn from private patients. Now, Shirley Williams again thought they'd done a great thing by getting it to 49%. Most of us didn't think that was a brilliant thing. It's better that, I mean, the press didn't even pick up that there was going to be no cap, right? They could have had 100%. So they did win on that, but 49% is still too much. And it enshrines that any qualified provider in law gets the Care Quality Commission to sort of give kite marks to organisations to which GPs can refer patients. And this is going to be done on quality. Now, tell me, how do you actually know about the quality of service before it's been provided? So when Serco take over paediatric services in Devon, they haven't got any paediatricians. They're advertising in NHS hospitals for locals to do it. And when Virgin take over the sexual health services in West Sussex, where's their expertise in this? They don't have it. And yet they outbid the British Pregnancy Advisory Service, the biggest charitable provider of abortion services in the country. It's created a whole lot of other things. Health Watch, which is to replace LINCS, which was a pale imitation of CHCs. Health and Wellbeing Boards, which have no statutory powers, but some responsibilities, and it strengthens Monitor into being a regulator, which they said in their impact assessment, like the regulators of gas and electricity and the railways, which we all know are so wonderful, aren't they? So what this is going to do, unless we start it, is to fragment the NHS into competing bodies, takeover of services by private companies, which is already happening, as I've just said. And this is happening due to Labour's lovely idea of splitting the PCTs into purchasing providers and then having transforming community services, that's what TCS stands for. And so they put these out to tender, and you get every Tom, Dick and Harry applying to run a service. And when I spoke in Sheffield, somebody told a very moving story about how their drug program, which had been run very successfully by the PCT, was given to some private company that didn't have any premises for 6 months. And then when they did have the premises, it didn't have wheelchair access, which is essential if you're dealing with people who've been misusing drugs. The bureaucratic and legal costs will rise. But before I say that, that is going to lead to duplication of services effort in some cases, like, you know, a surgery, which is easy to provide in some ways, and if you just have the healthy people with a little bump here or there. But no service than others, the unattractive services like people and the people with mental health problems who don't always come when they should and all that sort of thing. And GPs will be decommissioning services, and they, as Lucy said, are the ones who get blamed. And also fraud is likely to increase as it does in the USA. And the fact that our Labour government had United Health as one of their commissioning support organisations to give the framework for external support of companies, I forgot what it's called now.
FESC.
That they had United Health on there, who've been indicted for fraud several times in the United States, and at the time we had a big case going on in New York State. It beggars belief. And already we know that a lot of GPs have got private interests. The Health Service Journal did a survey. I think they found 3/4 of the people involved at the top levels of these shadow CCGs had private companies, so there may be a conflict of interest. Again, Shirley Williams says, we got it into the bill that they must say they've got a conflict of interest. But it didn't say that they've got to resign and not take part in making decisions and things like that. So what can we do? We've got to monitor the proposed changes and to question them and get in there before. And public health doctors are in a good place to do this, because they know when people are starting to think about privatising things. And when you are told by the PCT or the CCG that they have to do it, they don't necessarily have to do it. And they lie about it, these bureaucrats. They lie because they're being pushed by the Department of Health and they don't stand up to them. News and local media, we've heard this already. Local radio is very good and local newspapers are very good. And get a good relationship with your local journalism. And now we've got a pledge, which I'm going to show you in a minute. Get your GP to sign this pledge and put pressure on the CCG leaders to sign the pledge about how they will operate. Keep pressure up on MPs, especially in marginal constituencies, and tell MPs that abolishing the purchaser provider split brought in by Kenneth Clark in 1990 would save at least $10 billion a year. In Scotland and Wales, they've done that. Their health services haven't fallen apart. This commissioning, when the select committee did a review of commissioning, they talked about this ludicrously named world-class commissioning. And they gave evidence that no one had done this, what they were trying to do, anywhere in the world. And they're using our money to do it and having great conferences in classy places. And, you know, you don't need it all. Just need a good public health doctor and some people who know what's going on the ground. And work within the political parties to change their policy. And that's why I was so angry when I read what Ed Brown said yesterday. And then please join or donate to keep our NHS public so we can mobilise people via our website and our meetings and our literature. Now, this is the pledge. This clinical commissioning group will uphold the principle of first do no harm, which is a medical sort of saying. We will take no action and adopt no policy that might undermine our patients' continued access to existing local health services that they need, trust and rely on. In the spirit of clinically led commissioning, we reserve entirely the right to decide who we contract with to provide services for our patients. We will take these decisions on the basis of the best interests of our patients and wider local communities. We will refuse to allow any qualified provider to be imposed on us from above. In the interest of transparency, we will not engage in any contracts or negotiations which impose conditions of commercial confidentiality. We manage the Islington Division put in a motion to the BMA's Special Representative meeting in March of 2011. We got it through that we were against commercial confidentiality. We will consult local communities before implementing any changes that affect them, and our board will make all major decisions related to services in public session. Now, the BMA met after this had gone round, and their GP committee has adopted virtually all of those. The only thing they didn't say was that they would involve the public before. quite an important difference. But the other things, the commercial confidentiality, the any qualified provider, etc., etc., they are suggesting that clinical commissioning groups adopt their fair charter. Now, Lansley sent out a letter in February to CGE's head saying, "You will have freedom with your new powers and responsibilities to commission services in ways that meet the best interests of your patients. You will have the freedom to work with whoever you want in commissioning services. You will be free from top-down interference." And he says there that Monitor can't force them to use a particular provider, and that the fragmentation they've been told about isn't going to occur. So this letter, I think, can be used in any legal challenge that people make when they are pushed to do what Monitor says to Lansley. So practical ways to influence decisions. Every GP practice is supposed to have a patient participation group. How many of you have got one? Well, see, it was news to me as well. I didn't know that this was something they had to do. And they also are supposed to do a survey once a year of what the patients think about things. And they get paid for that, so that usually means that they will do it. So these patient representatives can get on to, if the CCG write their constitution in that way, they can get on to the CCG. So we want to get in there whilst the CCGs are writing their constitutions to ensure there's patient representation. Health Watch is pretty toothless. We put in the CQC, and we all know they're not much good. But again, if you get onto that, you can push from the inside. The Council Health and Wellbeing Boards and the Health and Overview Scrutiny Committees, there you can use your influence when you elect councillors and to make sure that they go to the meetings and ask the right questions. You can become a Foundation Trust governor. If you are a member, you can be elected to be a governor. I know that that's pretty toothless as well, but maybe if people are aware of what's happening, they can stop their Foundation Trust getting 50% of private patients. And watch these dying PCTs. I know some of you from the PCT here, but some of them are acting in a really terrible way and telling people they've got to do things which they don't have to do. So you've got to watch them. And then there's these two people, lay members of these CCGs, which were put in after the polls. So we've decided in COMP that what we need to do is to become a more professional organisation. For 4 years, I've been running this from my house. From a tiny office with a part-time staff, and my secretary has not done any secretarial work for me for 4 years. She's been doing the finances for COMP. And really, we did a good job, but it wasn't good enough. And we've got to become really a more professional, better funded organisation in order to stop this bill ruining our health service. So we want to start a group in every major town. And when I received this invitation, one of the things that swayed me saying I'd come was the fact that I'd like to start a group in Birmingham, and maybe we can talk about that in the next bit. And we've got to work with all these people, because a lot of people are doing things, but they're all doing them at different angles and they're not talking together. And one of the things about Labour is that they must accept that their 2006 Act paved the way for this 2012 Act. And return to their 1997 manifesto commitment, which said, "Our fundamental purpose is simple but hugely important, to restore the NHS as a public service working cooperative for patients, not a commercial business driven by competition." And I managed to get this through my local Labour Party to recognise that the market approach adopted since 2001 election was misguided. It's going to be a hard job, because in all the debates they've been justifying themselves, saying, "Tell me a little bit, we were regulating," and acknowledge that there is no evidence that the market approach has been either beneficial to patients or cost effective. So here's some useful information. False Economy have just come up with two briefings about how to do things with your local bits. So the BMA have got 7 briefings on their thing, and the Royal College of Nursing survey that they did for their conference, which Lansley refused to believe. finally, we're going to have our AGM and a conference set up with NHS Support Federation on Saturday, June the 23rd, at Friends House, Euston. It's called Reclaiming the NHS. We're hoping to get 500 people, lectures and workshops, and we want lots of